innovation is happening and has happened in small towns. So you're seeing, gosh, just going back the last 20 years, the concept of patient navigators that began in Hazard, Kentucky, dental health aids, that's a concept that had its roots in Alaska. Telehealth, for example, that whole drive behind telehealth and the shift towards managing healthcare populations through technology, all has its roots in rural healthcare.
That's Alan Morgan, CEO of the National Rural Health Association and regular contributor to health policy publications across numerous academic journals. He's known for his work and advocacy for rural health equity at the state and federal levels. Alan has also been recognized as one of the top 100 most influential people in health by Modern Healthcare. I'm Ellen Kelsey, and this is the Business Group on Health podcast, conversations with experts on the most relevant health and well-being issues facing employers. Estimates have shown 30% of rural hospitals in the country are at risk of closing. This discussion explores the unique challenges faced by rural communities and the innovative solutions that have emerged. Alan, welcome to the podcast. So thrilled to have you with us today.
Oh, I really appreciate the opportunity to join with you.
All right. Well, let's start with what might be a somewhat provocative question to ask somebody like you, but why does rural health matter? Tell us from your perspective.
You know, that's a really great way to start because I think, unfortunately, a lot of people just don't appreciate the interconnected nature of rural America and urban America. There's this misconception out there somehow that rural is dying away and people are moving away from these small towns. But that's just not happening. I mean, looking at the Census Department data over the last 10 years, rural has consistently grown in population. And more importantly, rural adjacent to urban is some of the fastest growing geographic areas in the United States. And so you've got this interconnected nature of people living in these rural areas, driving to urban. And not to mention just the fact that you've got a lot of rural people both seeking healthcare at a local level and also at a large regional level.
From what I understand, a number of those people are enrolled on employer-sponsored plans. So from an employer perspective, largely our audience, it's a big deal because their employees, their workforce who live in these rural places, who might live and work there or live there and commute to an office somewhere else. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I think also a lot of times people don't recognize when you look at businesses in general, healthcare represents the largest employer in over 90% of the nation's counties that are rural designated counties. And so not just with the small businesses within these communities that have employees on their insurance plans, but also just recognizing the employment development component that healthcare plays as well too.
It's a big deal for sure in those communities. So let's talk about your work and the work of your organization. Tell our audience a little bit about what you all do at the National Rural Health Association.
We have more than 21,000 members across the U.S. If you care about rural health in rural America, there's a home for you within the National Rural Health Association. But primarily, our membership includes more than 90% of the nation's rural hospitals, rural health clinics, and rural community health centers. So if you're delivering healthcare in a small town, chances are either you or your organization is a member of our organization. And basically what we do as an association is we identify best practices. We share those best practices for hope of replication and really focusing just on what's unique about delivering healthcare in a small town setting.
I bet there's no shortage of things there, but not only what's unique, but also what is challenging. So let's talk about some of the challenges in rural health. What do you see today? What do you hear from your members and constituents?
Yeah, it's important to note that just from a starting place that rural is not a small version of urban. It's actually a unique healthcare delivery environment. And these small towns are places where oftentimes, those most in need of healthcare services have the fewest options available to seek that care. Rural America really is a study of workforce shortages, and that's something we've always talked about. How do we attract and retain high-quality professionals in a small-town setting? Workforce, number one, and then we're in the middle of a rural hospital closure crisis. So how do we maintain these access points to healthcare? But at the end of the day, I got to tell you, the main issue is how do we stop and reverse what we're seeing as declining life expectancies among rural populations.
And what is it about rural populations where you see the life expectancy? Is it access to care?
Yes, yes, and yes. It directly tied to, are you able to seek timely care and appropriate care? And it's one of the reasons why keeping 24/7 emergency room service availability is so very important. But also in a rural context, you have a higher proportion of the population that are low income, a higher proportion that are elderly, and in many cases, a higher proportion that has multiple health issues that they're facing from a lifestyle perspective. And so when you put together a population that has a hard time sometimes being able to seek care with those that really need a lot of care, it makes it a problematic situation.
I know one thing that you said when you and I were chatting previously, there's this misconception that these hospitals are closing because of bad management, bad leadership at the hospital. That's not the case at all, you would argue, correct?
No, not at all. I mean, you just look at a national map where we've seen rural hospitals close, and the majority of those have closed in the Southeast. The problem is just a payment system and how we have organized healthcare in the U.S. So unfortunately, you've got a lot of communities where you've got patients with real high healthcare needs, but the inability to pay. And in many cases, those individuals may not have insurance through their business or even through a government program. And so it really is an issue of bad debt. And as a nation, we're putting the cost of this care on the shoulders of these small town hospitals and clinics. And that's really what's driving these closures that we're seeing.
It seems to, you know, the layperson that post-pandemic we're hearing more frequently about these closures and many of the issues you just mentioned. Was the pandemic an accelerant, or was this happening all along and people are just paying attention differently now?
I guess the correct answer is yes to everything on that. In 2019, before we hit the pandemic, it was just amazing the fact that roughly half of the nation's rural hospitals were operating at a loss. So we had the pandemic, and the federal government recognized the impact on these facilities. And so there's a lot of federal funds that were put in to keep the doors open. Well, unfortunately, we're now past the pandemic from a federal assistance standpoint. And so we just released data this week showing that, unfortunately, once again, over half of the nation's rural hospitals are operating at a loss. And from a business perspective, that's just simply not sustainable. It's a long way of saying we're back to where we were before, and where we were before is not that good.
And I also know, as we spoke previously, that you know these closures are significant in magnitude for the overall population at large, but also disproportionately are impacting people of color.
Yeah. And that gets back to the original question you asked about the misconception it's a management issue or perhaps it's a volume issue. And I hear that a lot as well, too. Well, these small towns just don't have as many patients. But if you look at the closures, according to the University of North Carolina, more than half the nation's rural hospitals that have closed are from communities with high proportions of African-American, Latino, and Hispanic populations. So there's a direct equity issue here and the populations they serve.
Yeah, that's especially concerning for sure. I want to shift gears because I was so fascinated, again, as we were doing some earlier conversations and research on you and your work, you know, you made a comment about rural health is where innovation starts.
Yes.
And I've never thought about it that way. Shame on me. And I bet many of our listeners haven't either. So expand on that. What's happening from an innovation standpoint?
I cannot thank you enough for asking that question. As you might imagine, when I'm talking about rural health, so often it's the doom and gloom and the challenges. And it makes sense because we highlight the challenges so we can improve policy. But unfortunately, we're not doing a good job of telling the other half of that equation. And if you back up and just think about it, this makes perfect sense to all your listeners. These small healthcare systems and hospitals and small towns across the country, they're small organizations, and they're facing tremendous workforce shortages and tremendous financial pressures, which drives innovation. Honestly, the reason that I love the job working for the National Rural Health Association is getting to see where the healthcare system is going to be 10 to 20 years from now, because innovation is happening and has happened in small towns. You're seeing, gosh, just going back the last 20 years, the concept of patient navigators that began in Hazard, Kentucky, dental health aids, that's a concept that had its roots in Alaska. Telehealth, for example, that whole drive behind telehealth and the shift towards managing healthcare populations through technology all has its roots in rural healthcare. So we really are seeing the innovation that's happening in the healthcare system, all of those new ideas begin in a rural context.
That's fascinating. And those were great examples that you shared. And speaking about telehealth, let's expand on that. How is telehealth being leveraged? How did it start? How has it evolved? And where do you see it expanding?
Yeah, we all want the Jetsons telehealth, right? We want to be in our living room and be able to talk with our primary care clinician, being right into our living room. And fortunately, I think the pandemic has finally pushed us into that frontier where we're starting to see more of that direct-to-consumer primary care offer, which is fabulous. And we're all very excited about that. It has tremendous potential for small-town communities. But to your point, some of the more groundbreaking threshold uses, you have to talk about telepharmacy, because we had more than 1,000 rural pharmacies close over the last decade. And the concept of telepharmacy now brings pharmacists back into small towns. The concept of utilizing telehealth for behavioral health, that is huge. And a lot of the research showing that you have better outcomes by patients actually utilizing telehealth for behavioral health sessions. And then if you really want to get exciting, you want to talk about, believe it or not, teledentistry and integrating primary care into dental visits utilizing telehealth.
Could you give us a couple examples of telehealth and use cases that have shown promise?
Oh my gosh, yes. It's hard to pick a couple of my favorites, but let me give you two that actually come both out of the state of Tennessee when I was visiting our member facilities there. The first one was an example of a clinician that was utilizing telehealth to do for cancer screenings in a small community. And he made the point that he believed he could actually diagnose the patients better remotely, because through high definition, he could actually focus in on the skin in a way that actually he believed had better results than if he was there in person. I don't think we often hear about those examples of where telehealth not only is as good of, but in fact is better. And the second example I want to cite was in a birthing center in a rural community hospital, where the nurses were using Bluetooth stethoscopes tied into a clinician remotely. And he could actually be able to cut out the ambient noise and through his computer remotely, really better diagnose and assess the health status of these newborns in that particular hospital. And I cite these two again by showing that we've got to shift our mindset and realize that in certain clinical applications, this telehealth is actually going to provide better care than what we would see even face-to-face in a large urban facility.
Those are great examples. And I also know, you know, we talk about many of these individuals having to commute hours to the hospital, hours to a doctor's office. But for the homebound population, telehealth has really been a wonderful alternative for care for them as well.
Yeah, it's been a game changer. And one of the key regulatory changes through the pandemic involves site of care and actually allowing clinicians at a rural health clinic in a small town reach out to the homebound senior in their home. And prior to that, we had to have clinicians at a hospital or a larger health center beaming into those rural health clinics, still requiring the patients to drive. In some cases, that's just not always an option in these small towns.
Mm-hmm. One thing I also thought was really fascinating was some research and really interesting information that came forward that actually cites that rural care delivery is of higher quality for certain types of care. Expand on that. Where might you get better care in a rural setting than you might at, say, a major metropolitan, well-known facility? Certain types of care, certain reasons why?
Yeah. Now we're hitting all the topics I love to talk about. So yeah, that's a huge misnomer. I think it makes sense. When people think about quality, oftentimes they just gravitate towards high-end specialty care and specialty services. What we're seeing from the data, this is federal data nationwide, is what rural does and what they're designed to do, and that is primary care, general surgery. And articles published in the Journal of American Medicine, New England Journal of Medicine, and others have all cited when it comes to primary care and general surgery, the data metrics for rural healthcare, probably not surprising, are as good or in many cases better. And it's volume and it's focusing in on that type of practice and that connectivity. And let's be honest, it's also helpful in many small towns. You know your provider, they know you, they know what you ate at the softball game last night. There's that connectivity. And not to mention the handoffs. So many medical errors happen in bad handoffs. In small facilities, you just don't have those that you have in large urban facilities. So
it makes all the sense in the world when you describe it like that. But again, I don't think most people would think of it. So I really appreciate you illuminating that for the audience.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I do want to ask you about the Rural Emergency Hospital Program.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah, so for the first time in over 20 years, the federal government created a new provider type. And what's that mean? It's a new type of hospital. It is a hospital without inpatient beds. And that's the easiest way to describe it. It still has all the important services that you would expect to have in a traditional hospital that we've seen over the last 50 years. And that's, you've got outpatient services, a full array of those. You've got 24/7 emergency room service still available. And that is, as we talked, so very important. But you've also, they're relying on a high connectivity through telehealth applications with larger health systems, hospitals, networks, to make sure that they still can provide that care. But again, it eliminates the inpatient beds. Now, this is great because it maintains that point of access. They are full hospitals as rural emergency hospitals. They just don't have that long-term in-bed capacity. So maintaining access and recognizing in some of these smaller communities, it just doesn't make sense to have that overnight bed capacity.
And when was this approved and created by Congress? How recently?
Well, this is really as recent as you're going to get. The first rural emergency hospital was established a year ago now, in December of last year. So surprisingly, for us at least, there were 28 rural emergency hospitals converted or created last year across the U.S. Yeah, for a new, completely new hospital type to have 28 pop up, that's pretty exciting. Some of the estimates that we've been hearing is, you know, as high as 250, maybe 300 of these new hospital types spring up, maybe in your small town. And again, I want to be careful because this isn't for every community, but for a small town, maybe has an average daily census of one or two patients, this is a great opportunity for them to maintain that 24/7 emergency room.
For sure. All right. That's great. And that's surprising, 28 in 1 year already. And I was going to ask what your forecast is for how many more we might see. So you're saying at least a couple hundred, maybe 300.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. So I beat you to the punch on that. Now let's see how that works out. This is an option to how do we deal with this hospital closure crisis that we're dealing with.
Well, I think that is a sign of promise as you think about the future in rural health. A couple of things I wanted to ask you to draw forward as you think about areas of hope and bright lights as you look to the future. What are a couple of things that you would call out?
You know, the one thing I'll call out that I think is transforming healthcare as we know it now, and hopefully this is old news to everyone, but it may not be, and that is the rapid expansion and use of community health workers. This is a concept, again, it's a rural concept of utilizing trusted resources within your small town who are not clinicians, but providing them with basic public health training. And these are your Aunt May or your Uncle Joe, who's taken some community health worker training courses. And now they serve as that connector between you as a patient and your primary care physician. They may help drive you to your hospital appointment. They may check your medicines to make sure you're taking the right prescriptions. They may answer basic questions for you. But again, they're that missing connector between maybe a homebound patient who's not sure of what they should be doing or when they should call their physician and the physician themselves.
And are there other areas that you would call out in terms of innovation? As you said, you know, a lot of innovation starts rural. So 3 years from now, is there something you would look back and say, yes, that's the thing that's brewing, it's about to pop in rural health first before it pops somewhere else?
Yeah, yeah. This concept of hospital at home or a hospital without walls, this transition of tearing down the bricks and mortar of a hospital and through technology and through provider availability, actually bringing healthcare to patients in their home. And this is really a rapid transitioning movement that we're seeing in rural America now. And I think it has great promise, not just for rural areas, but also for urban.
And you all have some resources on that topic in particular, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And the easy thing is after this call, if you just Google Yahoo or Bing the words rural health, we're almost always the first website that pops up. And we have a ton of background research papers and articles on how this is transpiring and how hopefully your community can take part of this as well.
That's some good search engine optimization. I'm sure a lot of people envy you for that. And we will link to some of those resources in our show notes as well for our listeners.
Wonderful.
Alan, I want to ask you just, you know, one last question. Is there any advice you would give to our audience, to employers, to those listening about what they should consider or things they might want to do when it comes to rural health and the employees that they have that might reside in those communities?
Yeah, the first and foremost is just to think rural, for lack of better words. Too often, we bypass our local healthcare providers for providers in the city, not recognizing as we talk, the quality metrics are as good and many times better. And realizing that rural hospitals are community assets. And once you lose a rural hospital, it's really tough to get it back. And the data shows that the community often follows that hospital closure. So think about how you can support your local healthcare system and recognize the important role that they play.
Alan, thank you. You've brought forward some really compelling things for our audience to think about, to learn more about. You informed me of some of my own blind spots in this area. So thank you so much for joining us in the conversation today.
Oh gosh, Alan, I really appreciate the opportunity to join with you and look forward to working with your organization moving forward.
I've been speaking with Alan Morgan, a passionate advocate for rural health and CEO of the National Rural Health Association. In this episode, Alan and I discuss why rural settings are where health innovation begins and how new technology and policy can help tackle the biggest problems in rural health, like workforce shortages and preserving patients' access to care. I'm Ellen Kelsey, and this podcast is produced by Business Group on Health with Connected Social Media. Don't forget to share and review our podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated.